This is Teddy Atlas, and I hope you're listening to the Mike Saffo broadcast. Otherwise, you're lost, and you're going to get hit a left hook.
Ready, roll, Ted?
Yeah.
Teddy, first of all, let me congratulate you becoming a grandfather again.
Yeah, well, my daughter is pregnant again, so we'll be blessed, hopefully, again, to have another baby. October 23rd is the due date. We don't know if it's a boy or girl. We're old-fashioned over here.
So none of that gender reveal party stuff?
I don't even know what that is. I really don't. But, no, we do things the old way, and nature will tell us, and that's kind of like the way it was done for many years, and it worked. And I have two grandsons now. My daughter has one that's Joseph. He's 18 months, and my son gave us one who's 8 months old out in California.
Is Teddy still working with the Raiders?
Yeah.
Is that why you wear all the Raiders gear everywhere?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got to support, right? I mean, people say, you're a Raider fan. Well, my family is part of the Raider family, so it's more than just a fan. It's you're connected. It's important because your son has put a lot of time into it. It's his career. It's his livelihood. And he's a scout. He's one of the main guys. Mm-hmm. And he's with Mike Mayock, the general manager, and, of course, Gruden. And he loves them, and he thinks they're doing a great job. And hopefully this year we'll show some of that.
I thought becoming a grandfather is supposed to give a calm and presence. Do you feel yourself being a little calmer or no?
It depends on the circumstances. You know what I'm saying? It's the circumstances. I mean, I remember one time a guy was a friend of mine, and he was a guy who was involved in a lot of different things and a lot of tough things. And he said, me and him were talking, and that noise you hear, my wife's leaving, the garage is open now.
Well, you Teddy's gracious enough to open up his house for me to do the
podcast.
Yeah,
no problem. I'm keeping my word. I said I would do this for you, and I'm doing it for you, but it's no big deal. But, I remember a guy went through something really difficult, and he had been out of that kind of life, if you will, for a long time. And this was quite a few years ago, but it had been a few years since he'd been involved in anything that traumatic, that difficult. And I remember we were talking about it, and I said, how'd you be able to handle that? He handled it. And he said, it's always there. It's always in you. When the moment comes,
that's it.
It's like it didn't go away. It's there. So, I hope when the circumstances and the environment and good people around you, why wouldn't you be calm? I want to be that way all the time. I mean, don't we all want to be that way?
Of course. My second congratulations, Boxing Hall of Fame. How awesome is that?
Thank you.
That was when I got the ESPN alert, the Boxing 2019 inductees, I saw your name. It was unbelievable. For you, that must have just blew your world, right?
No.
Come on, really?
No. I mean, listen, I don't want to be a...
You can curse that.
No, I don't do that. I try not to. I try to be better than that, but I don't think it's necessary to be cursing on a public forum. I don't know. But it's not going to make me noticed more or better or mean what I say any more seriously than what I say it or have many more credence to what I say. What I say is what I say. Hopefully that's enough credence because it's coming out of my mouth and it's coming through my heart and my mind before it gets out of my mouth. No, again, I don't want to rain on anyone's parade. Mm-hmm. It's a great thing, and it's a great honor. It's terrific. But could I ever be putting out a quote to some people? And it's no knock on the legitimacy of these people putting it out there that they don't feel that way or that they don't supposed to feel that way. Mm-hmm. It's great. Because I'm happy for anyone who's happy. Really, that's great. But it's not the greatest thing in my life. The greatest thing in my life is my children, my wife. I'm blessed, and I mean, it's a miracle. You have two healthy children, and then they go through 30-something years of life, and they're in a great place. That's that's pretty, that's something to say, wow, that's a Hall of Fame stuff. That if that's how you...
Like a Hall of Fame family, well, seriously.
I'm not a Hall of Fame family, but I mean, if that's how you measure things by a word like Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. if that's how we measure things, well, I made the Hall of Fame already, baby. You know, so this, it's nice.
Yeah.
Is it nice? You know why it's nice? Again, I can't put out a phony quote and saying this is the greatest day of my life, because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
When I heard that, but what's great about it is that it will be another moment that I can share with my family that will make them happy, and that'll make me awful happy and feel awful damn good. And you know what? Anything that does that, you have to say thank you for giving me a chance to do that.
How did you get the call? First and second, did you write your induction speech yet?
Which one you want answered first? The first one, probably. I got the call while I was in training camp with a fighter that I came back to train, Alexander Volzik. And it was when we were getting ready to fight for the light heavyweight championship of the world against Adonis Stevenson, who was, in my estimation, the hardest puncher in boxing, or the second hardest puncher. Take your choice. Either him or Wilder. But he has a better delivery system than Wilder. He's technically a lot better and superior than Wilder. So the most dangerous man in boxing, we were getting ready to fight, in my estimation. I think in a lot of people's estimation, but at least in mine. That's what matters right now, because that's who we're talking about. And so I'm in training camp in Oxnard, California, and I get the call. And again, honestly, it was like, I am just thinking about this fight right now. I can't get excited. I can't, like, make plans like, well, you can make a phone call, you can do this, you can, if you can send this, Teddy, we like. I ain't sending nothing. Thank you. Don't feel bad. Again, I'm making people feel bad over something good. I'm not trying to do that or act like a jerk. But I got to fight it getting ready in a few weeks to get in there with a guy who, you know, like the old timers would say, he hit you on top of the head and he fractured your ankles. So I'm not.
Yeah, you guys going to war right now.
So you know what? Get back to me. Or I'll get back to you. Like, thank you. Great. I got to go. You know, like.
I love it.
And, you know, I'm, again, not being an idiot or jerk or. Ungrateful.
So how about the induction speech then? Did you write that yet?
Yes.
Oh, so it's
I'm not going to, again, I'm going to tell you things when you hear it, you're going to say, I'm surprised. I'm just going to tell you, you know, hopefully what I always try to say, which is the truth. Because if you can't say the truth, well, you know, you should keep your mouth shut, right? So, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, well, it sounds better if I say, no, I didn't write it yet. I'm, you know, I didn't have time. No, I did write it. I wrote it because it's important. Again, it's important. Everything I said doesn't mean it's not important.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. And it's important that I say the right things when the important people in my life are going to be sitting there during an important moment. So it's important.
I'll tell you, I started my podcast around 4 years ago, Teddy. And I made a list. I'm like, oh, you know what? I do know some people that are well-known. I had a bunch of athlete friends. And obviously, on my list was Teddy Atlas, well-known boxer, boxing trainer, boxing commentary. I never got around to having you on. And then, you know, I'm on YouTube, and I see Teddy Atlas coming up on Joe Rogan. I said, are you kidding me? I might have missed the boat because Teddy Atlas is going to go big time on me. So thank you for coming on.
Yeah, but this big time stuff is, please. You know what I mean? How do I answer that? Let me answer that big time. You know what I mean? You are what you are. You know what I mean? We are what we freaking are. You know, because I'm not on Joe Rogan, I'm no smaller. And because I was blessed enough to be on a good man's show, and he is a good man.
Great man.
He's really a good man. Because I'm fortunate enough to be on a good man's show, I'm no bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one. I am what I am. And that stuff ain't gonna, if that influences me, shame on me. You know, I mean, give me one of those pills in those movies where foam comes out of your mouth after you chew them. right? And get the fig out of here because, well, what are you doing? What are you playing, a game?
How long was that podcast with Rogan? Was that 2.5 hours?
No, try like 3 hours and 15 minutes or something.
All right, I know. And Teddy said to me
and
today,
then probably to, and listen, God bless Joe that he could tolerate me, right, for 3 hours and 15 minutes. But I'll say it again. I was very blessed and fortunate that Joe would allow me to be on his show.
Because you told me you want to double that time tonight and do a 6 hours, 30 minutes. So,
please.
Teddy, if you want to do 6 hours, speaking of
podcasts. Tell the people now that was a joke.
Obviously, it was a joke. This isn't 6 hours. Please, I have to go home to my fiance. Speaking of podcasts, Teddy Alice has a podcast. How did that come about? Because you don't seem like the podcast guy.
Well, I guess I'm not.
Well, you got a great podcast. How'd that come about?
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I can't judge that. Other people have to judge that.
Mm-hmm.
You just judge it. I appreciate that. No, it came about with my kids. My kids are smarter than me. And they're aware of things that I haven't been aware of or don't allow myself to, you know, get interested in too much. Boxing's been my whole life, you know. And I'm not sophisticated with technology. You know, I don't go on the internet. I don't do any of that stuff. I mean, it wasn't all that long ago I had a flip phone. So I'll tell you a funny story. The way I got rid of the flip phone, I was going to Australia to call the Pacquiao Horn fight for ESPN, and I didn't want to be without a phone for a week, you know. So I knew enough. I'm not, like, completely numbnuts, right? Right? I don't have all stones up in this part of my region. So I told my wife, who's the greatest person in the world, I said to her, and without her, I don't know what I'd do, but anyway, I said to her, Elaine, do me a favor. And I was doing it like you take the laundry out, you know what I mean? Like without even thought. I just, like, you finish a towel, you just throw it in the laundry. You're not thinking of it. I said to her, Elaine, do me a favor. Can you take this? I've got my flip phone. I handed it to her. Can you take this and get it, internationalized? I made up the word, I guess, you know? So she was like, she's looking at me, you know? And she's like, get it what? And I said, I don't know, internationalized. Like, just get it fixed so I can use it for when I go. I'm leaving, like, day after tomorrow. She says, you can't do that. I said, what do you mean? Why not? She said, that phone, you got to get a new phone, Teddy. So I said, no, I'm not getting rid of this. You know, I said, no, they could do something. I know they can.
They can
internationalize it, right? They hit it with a beam, right? Something, right?
Like, something, like, can make this work.
Something, right? Remember Star Trek, Scotty, beam me up, right? I mean, something.
Somebody do something.
Something could do something, right? So, listen, hon, you can't do it. So she said, go into a Verizon shop and ask them. So I go into a Verizon shop on Staten Island, you know, and I walk in, young kid in there. And I'm not going to say he's a wise guy, because he wasn't. He was a good kid, but it was pretty funny what wound up happening. You know, he's a young kid, and I walk in there, and I say, hey, buddy, can you internationalize? I'm like embarrassed to say it, but I'm like, can you internationalize it? So he looks, he goes, he said, for what? What do you want to do? And actually what he said, the way he wound up saying it, I want to try to say it as close to the way he said it. I said, can you do something for me, you know, fix this? I need to use it in a couple of days in Australia. And he looks at me and he says, Teddy. So obviously he, you know.
He knew you.
Yeah. He goes, Teddy, I might be able to do Yonkers. I'm not sure about Australia. And I'm like, looking at him, what did he just say? And this guy, a comedian? And I'm like, and then he's like smiling. He goes, Teddy, no, I'm just kidding. He goes, no, you can't. He goes, you know, it's time for a new phone. Anyway, out of all of that, I wound up buying an iPhone. Well, my wife bought me an iPhone. And now I have an iPhone, whatever that is.
And you're active on Twitter. You have Twitter
now.
Yeah,
and I guess what I was, I guess I kind of went all over the place. But to answer your question properly, getting into a podcast, my kids always are looking forward. Mm-hmm. They're always looking ahead for me. And they both felt, especially when I wasn't broadcasting the ESPN fights at ringside. I'm doing the Sports Center stuff now for ESPN, like I did the other day for the, you know, for the Crawford fight, and also the week before for the Lomachenko fight. I'm doing all that, but I'm after 22 years, I wasn't doing the ringside, so they were like, "Dad, we hear a lot of people because they are." Out there on the internet a little bit, and my daughter's a lawyer. My son works for the Oakland Raiders, like I said. So obviously they're as savvy as you can be with the computers and with, you know, with the social media stuff. And they said, "There's people that want to hear your voice." So, and I ignored it. I said, "Nah, nah, 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 nah." And so they kept saying it. And then my daughter was after I went on a Rogan show. My daughter said, "Dad, listen, I'm getting a lot of responses because you don't look at this stuff." Mm-hmm. She runs an Instagram that I would never have if she didn't decide to do it, and never. So she said, "Dad, there's so many people asking you to be out there with something." So then I had the good fortune, the very good fortune of meeting somebody named Rob Moore, just a young PR kid, young sharp kid, who we met, and he said to me, "Your kids are right. There's a voice, you have a voice, and there's a place for that voice out there in this business." I said, "Nah, I don't think so." And he said, "Teddy, listen, not only do I think so, I'm willing to put my resources behind it."
Wow.
And back up, you know, basically do a podcast, whatever it takes to do it, put all the resources I need to put behind it to make a podcast happen with you. Would you do it? And when I had my kids saying it, and then I had this young person that I met that was a good person that had that kind of belief, and not just belief, but willingness to risk what he was going to risk to basically go behind this.
Yeah.
I said, "Well, maybe I should do it." So, yeah. So I started doing it, and you just said it was seven episodes in.
The Fight with Teddy Atlas. I love it. And this past week, you did your first kind of interview show. Who'd you have on?
Well, it was our first or second interview. It was our second because our first interview was a few episodes ago with Lomachenko.
Yes, okay.
So it was our second interview. But this was Dustin Poirier, just a tremendous person, just like Lomachenko's a special, special person, but in a different field. Instead of boxing, Poirier is in the UFC, and he's a Rocky story. He's a great story. He's a great story for anybody in any field, you know, in life. I mean, he's a guy that's been in the UFC, a very tough business. Oh, my God. You talk about tough. And he's been in it for over 10 years, 40 fights. And he's lost fights. He was even thinking about 1 foot out the door a year ago about retiring. Just in a brutal, tough sport, been down a tough road with a lot of bumps in it. And like people in life that you don't hear about mm-hmm. sometimes. But now you get a chance to hear his story, which is really a gift for a lot of people because he gets a title fight, he's a big underdog, and he wins it.
Big underdog.
And he's a big underdog, and he wins. He's Rocky, and real Rocky.
Yeah.
And so we had the privilege of my guys that do the show with me, Ken Rideout and Rob Moore, they got it together where he could be a guest. I said, "Yeah, that sounds like something we should be doing." And we had him on as our guest, and people are really reacting to it.
People are digging it, man. I'm telling you, I read the reviews on it. People are digging your podcast. You have such an You have such an influence. I'm going to tell you, our families know each other 25 years or so, just say. You're probably the biggest reason why I fell in love with boxing, because growing up, like, "Oh, that's Teddy Atlas. You know, your son and my brother played together." And all you would hear, like, "Oh, he trained Tyson. Now he trains Michael Moore and Shannon Briggs." So whenever Michael Moore fought or Shannon Briggs, it was appointment watching in my house. And then I would see you on TV, and it put a connection because I'm like, you know, growing up on Staten Island, you wouldn't really see people you knew on TV. So all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, I know. That's Teddy's dad. He's on TV. Then, you know, Michael Moore wins the title, and I'm like, hold. And you made me fall in love with the sport because you gave such a connection. So I don't know if that's a thank you or a come on because it's a crazy sport you're in. But I want to talk now about the...
Well, thank you. I appreciate
it. But I mean that. But I want to talk about the current state
it's
of...
It's not boxing. A come on because you're here in my house. So you don't need that crap.
No, it's true, though.
But thank you.
Let's talk the current state of boxing a little bit. The heavyweight division has three huge names in it. You know, we're going to go with Joshua, Wilder, and Fury. Jarrell Miller just failed a drug test. And I know you always said that there's never an easy fight. But Wilder and Fury, on paper, have, you know, easier fights. Does it frustrate you, being in the business, being a lifer, that these guys can't just fight to unify these belts?
I'm a realist. Mm-hmm. When you're in boxing your whole life, you're a realist, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. That doesn't give me clout, you know, that doesn't give me, you know, any special status other than I'm a realist. Other than, you know, you're in a business like this, you learn if you don't move your head, you get freaking hit. And if you get hit enough, you get freaking put on your backside. Mm-hmm. So I'm a realist. I know life as far as I don't live in la-la land. So as far as answering your question, you know, I mean, the environment of boxing is always what it's allowed to be. If the fans allow it to be, that it's going to be that. If the fans run away from it, you get better fights. I mean,
makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
I'm just saying. I'm just listen. People complain, you know, socially about who our politicians are. Hey, it's something called voting out there, baby. You know what I mean? If you guys get sick of it enough, mm-hmm. you vote these people out or you vote them in. But you forget the power is in the people. We forget that. It's a nice coin phrase. You know, it sounds so cool. You know, it sounds catchy. But people forget how real it is, and they forget to use it. And so, again, I'm a realist, if nothing else. That doesn't make me smart, dumb, this, that, but, you know. But it makes me where I deal with what is there to deal with. And does it frustrate me? Listen, I wish, I thought the 80s was a really good time for boxing because you had fights on free TV. None of this pay-per-view and everything else and apps and, you know, and everything else that we got today with streaming and all that. It was on free TV. It was on, you know, Saturday and Sunday afternoons. You could identify with the guys. You could watch it on network television. But here's the kick. You had good fighters, and you had the best fighters fighting each other. You had Leonard fighting Hearns. You had Duran fighting Leonard Hearns. You had Benitez. You had Pernell Whitaker. Oh, my God.
So if the fight needed to happen, it happened.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. The people wanted the fight. It happened. You just said it. Powerful words. And you know, it was, again, it was the best. You had some good fight, light heavyweight division. I mean, Matthew Saad Muhammad and Michael Spinks and Jerry the Bull Martin and Yaki Lopez. Oh, and, you know, you had all these guys fighting each other. And then you had Jake Scott in jail, was a story. Wow. And he's undefeated in jail in Rahway. And he fights Jerry the Bull Martin. And you figure they're going to give him a free ride because he's a story out of jail. Nope. Jerry the Bull Martin beats him. None of that fairyland stuff.
This isn't a Hollywood movie.
No, baby. And so that's boxing. Mm-hmm. For me, so I'm not going to answer you by saying I stay up at night and I'm frustrated and I'm pissed and I'm throwing stuff against the walls. You don't see dents in my walls.
Maybe
no,
not.
I'm not doing that. But do I wish that boxing could be presented and respected in a way that I respect it and like to see it presented in my view, in my eye's mind, or my mind's eye? Yeah, I wish it would be. I wish it would be. Do I think that somebody, I'm not afraid to tell the truth, but it's gotten me a little slapped here and there and bruised here and there. It's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm still here, but it's done other things for me too. It's allowed me to have a reputation that's okay. You know, it's allowed me to be able to tell my children things and they listen to me. That's important to me. It's allowed me the right to say something to my kids when I need to say something with strength, with power. You know, and what I'm going to say is, did somebody deserve to be in that ring making $5 million the other night more than Amir Khan? Yeah. No. Am I crying? Am I throwing dishes? No, I'm not doing that.
You actually said he's a better manager than he is a fighter, and you kind of nailed it. Like, he's a promoter. That's what he is.
And he made $6 million against Canelo, and he made $5 million here, and he made X million here.
Robbery.
I'm just saying, look, God bless him. He can make it. Yeah. That's fine. It's up to the other people that allow it to happen. But God bless him for trying. You know, he's trying to do what you know, he's got a brain to do. Well, he's got an ability to do, and that allows him to hopefully take care of his family properly, so, or even better than properly. But I'm just saying, if you're going to put the truth on the line, did someone else, is there another fighter out there that not just would have gave a more competitive fight? We know that already, but now with the aftermath. Mm-hmm. But I kind of felt it before, and you know, you have to, I should know a little something about boxing
after all these,
right? I mean, like Costamato said, Teddy, if you don't know boxing after all these years, you should go sell Italian ices on the corner. I don't want to sell Italian ices on the corner, all right? So I think I have to know something. I hope I do. So what I'm saying is, forget about just that we know now it wasn't competitive, but somebody else did deserve it more. Yeah, but again, that's not the reality, because the reality is that promoters are looking to protect themselves, protect their little piece of turf.
That's it.
The reality is that they're looking for the safest opponent they can get, and at the same time still be able to get the money that they're getting for the fight from the public, from the network.
Well, you nailed it, Teddy. As long as I'm buying the pay-per-view event, why are they not putting it on? People are buying it, so why not put it on? You gave a heavy sigh when I said Jarrell Miller with the drug test. Just, does that ruin his career now at this point?
I'm going to be careful saying this, because maybe it should ruin his career, but okay. then again, I'm a believer, because I'm an example of what I'm about to say. Everyone deserves second chances in life.
Good.
So I'm going to say that. I say it twice. I make sure I say it loud enough so people hear it. Everyone deserves a second chance. But should he be accountable for it? I mean, he's losing a fight. But besides losing the fight and losing a payday, should there be a suspension attack? We'll see what they do. Mm-hmm. Because these commissions are paper lions. They're paper lions. It's ridiculous. And a lot of their salaries are paid by tax people's money. Like, why? For what if you're not doing nothing? Do something. So should he be an example to other young fighters that you shouldn't do this? And by being an example, there should be strong repercussions besides that he lost his fight. You know, as far as the suspension, yes. I'll say that loud, too. Yes. And then he can redeem himself. Then he can have the great opportunity that people in this world and people in this great, great country called the United States of America get to do, redeem themselves.
And
redemption.
America
and nothing
loves a comeback.
Nothing is better than that movie called Redemption. Nothing. So, yeah, but is it? I think there's a lot of it out there. Mm-hmm. See, again, people, Teddy, what? You can't talk the truth. Shut your mouth. Well, right. Really, there's a lot of it out there. He got caught. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness there's VADA, and there is an apparatus. There is a mechanism in place, you know, a place where you know, VADA can be involved in a fight, and they can do the doping test to see if so. But that's not there for every fight. How many fights out there that people are dirty, but you're never going to know it?
That's scary.
You're never going to know it. And I can tell you from being in this business 40 years, there's a lot of it out there. There is. Do I see the needles going in their arms? Of course not. Of course not. So do I have to be careful what I say? I have to be responsible what I say. But does that mean I don't know, you know, that old thing called common sense, right?
Yep.
Right? Like your nose on your face, you'd see your nose is there. It's not, you know, it's not much more than the common sense in front of your nose. That there's a lot of it, and a lot of it, most of it, as in I'm sure in a lot of places in life, in a lot of sports in life, a lot of areas in life, a lot of, you know, crafts in life, there's illegal things going on. You only see a little bit of it. You know, they only catch a little bit of the fraud on Wall Street. right? They don't catch all of it.
They catch what they want to catch,
too. Yeah, all of that. Yes. And you should know because you have that in your blood and your senses and your upbringing and your training. You're a cop.
Mm-hmm.
So you understand better than the average person, yeah. But we're talking about this, and there's too much of it out there, yeah. I believe. And this, again, you know, you could say, what a moron, what a dope, you know, because he's going to lose a payday. But he should be punished for this. Mm-hmm. And I'll take it further. Again, a lot of people, maybe a few people will say, Teddy, you know, thanks for saying that. And there'll be a lot of people that say, why don't you not say it? You know, because they're on the other side of the fence to it. But I think the people around them should have repercussions.
Yeah.
What is he alone on this? You're going to tell me that his
he's
trainer?
He's not a lone wolf.
Please. Please.
You're a trainer. You
again,
know, right?
Well, you're a cop.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to each other here.
Exactly,
we're looking in each other's eyes here.
We know.
Right? I mean, you're going to tell me the trainer was not complicit on this? You know? Come on. Come on. You're going to tell me the people, that tight circle of people that are involved in his training, involved in his daily routines, in his daily management of his life, in preparation for a fight, they don't know about it? Okay. Give me that bridge.
Don't sell that
give
to me and you, Ted.
Give me that bridge, because I want that bridge. I want to pay $10 for it.
Let's fast forward right now. How the hell did the nail, Volzdick, how did he get you back into training? How did this happen?
By being a good person.
Really?
Good human being.
How many, without naming names, how many people have asked you recent, like in the years, to come back and train them?
Nah, listen, I'm not going to.
You know a lot, Teddy.
I've been asked.
And what was it about him that I love this kid, this is my new guy?
The same thing that made me come back when I was away and the door was closed and, you know, closed shut. That made me come back for Timmy Bradley. Because I saw him as a good person and someone I could help. And this time the door was bolted shut. It wasn't just shut with the normal lock.
You weren't just turning the door handle on this one.
Yeah, this one had that metal thing that goes
the deadbolt
goes across the way, you know? And it goes into the wall. And
he's a special kid, this one.
Yeah, well, I mean, I got a phone call from David Berlin, a man who I trust, a lawyer in the boxing business, and a lawyer who does pro bono for my foundation for years. So I know he's a good man. When he talks, I listen. And he called me, and the manager, Agus Klimas, who I've known for years, the manager of Volzdick, called me. And jointly, they got a hold of me and told me that they'd like to talk to me. David first alerted me that they would call me. And then Agus called me and said, I'd like to talk to you about training, you know, the fighter you just said, Alexander Volzdick. You know, I was probably thinking about saying no.
Mm-hmm.
No knock or anything on him because I wasn't going to give it any thought. Just don't want to be, I didn't trust the business. I didn't want to be, you know, there's a lot of the business that I hate. I don't know if that's too strong a word, but it's probably an honest word. It's an easy word, I guess. Sometimes it's too easy, maybe. Maybe I shouldn't just say it that way. But I just I don't trust.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, sometimes it becomes easier to say no than yes, you know. And sometimes it's a weakness on your own part to do that, too. And you got to check your weaknesses if you're in a business that calls for strength, like boxing does. So I try to check my weaknesses when I can.
Okay.
Yeah. Because if you start saying no, I don't want to be a weak person. So the place I go to check it nowadays to check my weaknesses is my children. So I check my weaknesses with my children. And my children said, yeah, you're wrong. I said, you might be right, but you're wrong to that quickly say it.
Okay.
So I said, all right. So they reminded me of how fortunate and how lucky, just how lucky I am. And both of them told me that we think you're the greatest commentator of all time. This is my children. So, of course, I can say it only because I don't sound like a schmuck saying, like I'm saying it or someone said it. It's my children. So they're allowed to say crazy things, you know, things over the top, because they're my children. So they said that the best commentator and all this stuff, but that's not why you were asked 22 years ago to be a commentator. It's because you're a trainer, and you're not a trainer, Dad. You're a teacher. And Customato told you when you were 18 years old that you were born to teach. And Customato was right, Dad. And you taught us. And you taught a lot of fighters. And Dad, you also taught us that doing something in your life that can be special and that you can really enjoy and that can help people is a privilege. And Dad, are you forgetting that this is a privilege? And that privileges go away, Dad? That they don't last forever?
Wow.
And I was like emotional. You know, I feel that way a tiny bit just think about. But I was like, you know, you guys are really special, you know? And so they said, so Dad, before you say no to somebody giving you the privilege of coming back and doing what maybe you were born to do, teach. Why don't you think about it instead of just saying no? Say, all right, thanks, guys, you know. Yeah, that's what I do. And they also reminded me, they said, Dad, you started a foundation 22 years ago in memory of our grandfather, your father, to help people because that's important to you. But you also told us when you were teaching us about the foundation that it's not that we're doing something special and it's not that we're special for doing it because people come up to you and they thank you for what you do because you put a wheelchair ramp up or you paid for somebody's son to be flown out of state for hospital treatment that wasn't available in state or that their insurance wouldn't pay for and your foundation did that, you know. But that... instead of it being like taking accolades for people saying thank you, you reminded us that we were the ones that should be thankful, that we're in position to do that. You reminded us of that, Dad, when we sometimes were thinking, oh, gee, well, we did this and we did that. And you said, no. You guys, we're lucky that we could be in a position to hear those things. To do those things, to help a tiny, 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 tiny bit with those things. We're fortunate. We're privileged. And so, Dad, why would you not, if you got a fighter who's in a tough fight, who thinks you can help them, because that's why he's coming to you, why would you not want to help him? Because that's what you do, Dad. You help.
That's like a Vince Lombardi talk right
there.
Yeah,
well, it was better. Although Vince Lombardi's pretty damn good. And so I, you know, I had something to think about it.
Wow.
So I did. I did some thinking, you know, and I had to give an answer because these people had to have a trainer to get ready pretty soon. And, you know, it was months away to get ready for this fight that's going to change this kid's life one way or the other. So, and it's serious. That responsibility is serious to me. It should be, right? So I told the manager, he goes, listen, I can't give you an answer, but yes or no, but I need to come out there for 2 days and spend 2 days with the fighter and see what kind of what I see.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, come on, let's go. So I flew out, spent 2 days out there. 1 day was for the gym and the other day was to spend to see his family, see him, spend time with him, see what kind of person. So I saw him as a, you know, I saw him as a person, as a man. I saw him as a father. I saw him as a husband. He's got three beautiful children and a great wife. And I saw that. And when I saw that, I also saw, and I can't do it if I can't, if I don't feel I can help. If I don't feel I can improve or help,
mm-hmm.
I got to say no. Because, like, what am I doing it for, right? So I saw, I looked at film, did my due diligence, you're supposed to. And I saw I could help him. I thought I could help him at least. And that's not, you know, bravado or bragging or being conceited or being a jerk. That's what you're supposed to know in a business. A guy, if you're a mechanic and a guy brings a car into you, you're supposed to know, I can fix that car. you know what? I could help those breaks. You're supposed to. I mean, that's what you're trained to do. So I said, I could help this guy. And now do I want to? That's the key.
Because it's dedication. Yeah, you're taking time away from your family.
And there's, listen, it's a privilege, but there's a risk. Because people love to take shots at people when they're fortunate enough to get to a pretty nice place like I have in my took a long time, but you know, when you're fortunate enough to get to a level of success, I don't know, it's a human phenomena. I don't completely understand it or appreciate it, but I do recognize it. That people it makes them feel better to take a shot at you sometimes. But see, I have kryptonite. My kryptonite is I don't watch the internet. So I avoid.
You don't even see, it bounces off you because you honestly don't know.
Yeah, it's kryptonite, baby. So that saying, see, I make sayings come true for me.
Okay.
I make them work for me. Ignorance is bliss. I make that work for me, baby. And, you know, and so ignorance is chosen. So I choose my ignorance. So I choose to be ignorant of the internet, and it's bliss for me. So I don't, but I do understand that it could impact my family. That touches me, that they can hear it, they can feel it, and that people like to be mean. And so the risk is in that way, and the risk is in yourself. You want to win. You want to be right. But the greatest risk, why I didn't say yes right away, it took me, I don't know, a couple of weeks, is I don't want to fail the person that trusts me. Now, the fighter is trusting me. I don't want to fail him. So that is something I feel. And I don't feel it, and then it goes away. I feel it every day. And I'm not saying I'm different than anyone else. I can't speak for anyone else.
I never thought of that. That the fighter's, hey, I need you to help complete me. And that's more pressure on you, too.
Well, it's supposed to be. I mean, what the hell is it, free ride? I mean, you're supposed to be providing something. And then, listen, it's not a complicated, you know, scheme here or understanding or formula here. You know, it's not E equals MX 4.5 point cubic. No, it's pretty simple. It's where you're supposed to be. You're given an opportunity in life. You're supposed to react to that opportunity, and you're supposed to provide what you're being asked to provide. You're supposed to, you know, you get, you give. You're hired to do a job. You're supposed to do the job, okay? It's pretty simple. But in this case, it's human beings. It's one-on-one. It's those three kids that I met. It's all of that. And so it becomes, for me at least, it becomes every day thinking about, am I going to make sure I don't fail this responsibility? That's all. And it's something that's not comfortable. I mean, again, I'm privileged. It's not like I'm doing this for free. I'm getting compensated for it. Nobody has to tell me those things. I know all that. But it goes, but there's other parts to it.
It goes beyond that.
There's other parts to it. There should be, and there are. And I'm sure with everybody. But again, for me, it's just, you don't want to fail that responsibility. You don't want to fail a person that gives you complete trust. Going into, you know, he's not going into, you know, just walking into a building and spending X amount of hours and coming out of the building. He's walking into, getting ready to go into a ring that sometimes you don't come out of the ring. I mean, it happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go on the football field, sometimes you don't walk off the football field, right? I mean, it happens. You go into a race car, sometimes you don't come off the racetrack.
You don't walk out of the car.
Sometimes. And listen, do you think about it every day? No, of course not. I mean, you do what you do. You know, hey, a doctor. I'm going to switch it on people that are listening now. A doctor who takes the responsibility, takes that medical oath, that oath when they get out of medical school, you know, that they're going to preserve life or try to preserve life every time. They go to take care of a patient. There's no guarantee that it's going to be successful. They go to do surgery. There's no guarantee that surgery is going to work or that the patient's going to be alive on the table at the end of that 5-hour, 4-hour, 3-hour surgery, whatever it is. There's no guarantee to it. But they understand the responsibility, and they understand, you know, why they chose that profession. But you're going to tell me, and they get paid for their work and all that stuff, but you're going to tell me that if he's a human being, this doctor, that that's not hanging in the air?
Mm-hmm.
And that he doesn't get impacted by the reality that if you're a doctor long enough, that not every one of them is going to be successful. If you're a trainer long enough, not every one of time that you commit to somebody is going to live out the way you want it to. So, yeah. So I had, you know, I was the, but I realized at the end of the day, the easiest thing is the same thing I talk to kids in school, where I get asked to talk to these kids. I run social programs with my foundation where I go into at-risk schools and I tell them, if you start taking responsibility and ownership over who you are, over your behavior every day, I'm not asking you to get A's. I'm just saying, if you start taking a different approach, a different attitude, where you take responsibility over your conduct every day instead of just saying, I don't give a damn, which a lot of these kids are saying every day.
If you own up to
it. If you just take responsibilities for your behavior, what you can control. I know you can't control how your parents acted at home or you're one parent or you're no parents. I get it. I'm sorry for that. I am. But here we are. Here we are, baby. So I'm in your school saying if you can take responsibility instead of making excuses of I don't care no more. And I get it that you have a reason to feel that way. But if you can start thinking differently, I'm going to leave 100 tickets to a Knicks game my foundation is going to buy. This is what we do. We've been doing it for 22 years with the other stuff that I talked about earlier. I'm going to leave 100 tickets to a Knicks, Nets, Mets, Yankee game, and we're going to supply the buses. Because the Board of Ed, you know what? Sometimes, again, I people, you know what? You don't want to hear the truth. Leave the room for 2 seconds because sometimes the Board of Ed, SUC, I'm not going to, because I don't want to, again, I don't be cursing and being that jerk, but sometimes they piss you off.
Sometimes they disappoint.
They piss you off. Like you're trying to do something and you can't give me a yellow school bus. So
you have to do all the hurdles and you help these
kids
out.
But it's okay because at the end of the day, if it's what you want to do, it's part of the road. It's part of the road you got to go down. So you say, oh, well, the road's just a few feet longer than I figured thought it was. And it's just a little less paved than I thought. But we still got to be on this road to get there. So when I tell the kids this, you know, and I go in there to the schools and explain this to the kids to get them to take ownership over themselves, you know, it's the same thing.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the foundation because no interview, podcast, article about Teddy Atlas now isn't, Dr. Theodore Atlas Foundation.
Well, I'm glad because it can help us help people.
Yeah, but it's like synonymous with you now. Are you surprised how big the foundation got? Because I'm glad you mentioned it. It was my next thing I wanted to talk about because it went from a foundation, I remember at St. Teresa's hearing about it, to now when it's a gala. It's an event. It's a must. It's an appointment going to. Are you, besides the proudness and honor of it, are you just surprised how big it got?
I'm glad it got there.
Yeah.
I mean, am I surprised? I guess so. But I guess so. But I'm just, again, I feel, I don't know, the same thing, I guess. You know, I feel, I just feel grateful. I feel grateful that we can have the resources to help more people now that we got bigger and that we can do these things. And, you know, I just feel grateful for that and that for the trust of the people out there. And I take that trust real serious, you know, that they come to our events to give us the monies to do these things and know that we're going to do it, know that we're going to do it without administrative costs. We have one paid employee. I'll say it again, one.
And they
not 21, not 21, not 101, one paid employee, one small office. And so that means all other than that, which is a very nominal amount, quite frankly, all of the money goes to where it's supposed to
you
go.
Know, when you
and when there's an event, Teddy Atlas is buying a table to every event himself. Mm-hmm. I'm not going free. There's my dinner. I buy a table. Just like other people are good enough to buy, I do the same thing.
People know if they give 1 cent to the foundation, it's going to a good cause. And you, when you were on Rogan's podcast, you told stories about your dad. I bet you people tuned in to talk to hear about boxing and Tyson and this, and then your dad's stories came up, because I read the comments. Your dad was, I know you'll downplay, he was a saint. He was doing house calls at 80 years old. He wouldn't charge poor families. He opened. I told my mom yesterday during Easter that you were coming on, and we started talking about your dad. And she goes, "You know, he opened up a hospital on Staten Island. Like, he did these phenomenal things. Like, I was blown away on Rogan."
He opened a hospital, and so people, poor people, could get hospital care that they know way before this talk about Obamacare and all this. Decades before that stuff. There were no HMOs, nothing. And he opened up, he built, he didn't open it, he built, your mom's right, he built, not one, two hospitals. So, and the first one was Sunnyside on Staten Island, so people could get free hospital care, proper hospital care, when they had no money, when they were poor. And he absorbed the cost. And the people that had insurance, that had money, that came to the hospital because it was a good hospital, that covered the bills, you know. And what he had to absorb, he absorbed. And I just thought, look, we could go on for 10 days talking about this man. I just thought, and I'm not a pimple on his backside, but I just thought that a man who lived a life like that should be remembered. Mm-hmm. And what better way to remember him than in the spirit of the way he lived his life, to do what he did, you know, to the extent that we can.
You said he would go into, like, the projects late at night at 75, 80, just doing house calls, whoever needed him. That's just, that blows your mind, what a good person he was.
And the kids would run out of the projects, these poor kids that were, you know, sometimes left to the streets and everything that could be on the streets, would run out of the projects and carry his doctor's bag.
He was loved.
That's, you know, you talk about respect, or you talk about people people seeing, sometimes they just have to see that a person is there for the right reasons, and they automatically learn what to do. They automatically, goodness comes out in people that you might not have known was in them. It just comes pouring out in them.
That's why you surround yourself with good people. It gives off that energy. I don't know this answer, Ted, about you. You grew up the son of a doctor. So I'm assuming, you know, upper middle class, just say your dad was a good guy. How do you get involved in boxing when traditionally, because Boom Boom Mancini was just on. We just talked for like an hour and a half. And he was saying, like, he grew up a nice family. And boxing wasn't really a way out or something. How'd you get into it?
Boom Boom Mancini is different. His father was a real fighter.
And he wanted to follow in his dad's
footsteps.
Yeah, so
that's a whole different story. But
how do you get into it?
I mean, his father was a hell of a fighter and a tough, tough, tough guy doing a tough, tough, in a tough division, during a tough, tough time. And some of his career was taken away by going to the war, I believe.
Yeah.
And so Boom Boom showed himself to be a great son and a loving son and wanted to follow and give his son, his father, something that he didn't get a chance to fulfill.
The belt.
Yeah. So that's great. That's beautiful. My father wasn't a fighter, you know, but my father was the toughest man I ever knew. You know, and I was around, turns out I was around fighting my whole life and mm-hmm. so-called tough guys my whole life. And, you know, but the toughest man I ever met in my life was my father. You know, I started to learn that when I was, I don't know how old I was, but I was very, very young. And I walked in his room without knocking on the door, which you're not supposed to do, but, you know, you're a kid, you do that stuff. And I walked into his room, and there was a mirror to my left, and he was over on the right-hand side of the room. And I saw in the mirror, as soon as I walked in, I saw that he was undressed, and he was bent over in pain, and there was a weird contraption on his body. It was called a thrust. Uh-huh. I didn't know what it was, but it was a leather apparatus uh-huh. that pushed your insides in so they didn't stick out, because in those days they didn't have the ability to do the surgery with lasers the way they do arthroscopically and everything today for hernias. He had a double hernia that was sticking out. And so this thrust would keep it in. And I didn't know what to figure out. I just see this thing, and I see this man in pain who never showed any emotions at all, stoic, Iron Man, Superman. And he goes to work every morning at 7, doesn't come home to midnight when he has to do house calls and free house calls and stay in the office with patients that don't even have money to pay him. And he's staying, and the office hours are 4 hours, and he stays 9 hours because the line doesn't stop. And he's doing this every day. And Sunday he works. And Saturday he works. And every day. And so this man, you know, I know about Willie Mays a little bit and about Mickey Mantle and Willis Reed and those guys a little bit. And I like them a lot. But I didn't know what a hero was. But if I did, it was that guy.
Wow.
It was that guy. And so, and without words. No words. No him saying, this is what you got to do. You know, Teddy, I don't feel good, but I still go to work to make money for you. No. Not whispers. Nothing. No words or nothing, but one thing that was loud, action. Action. Every day seeing this man go without a word, never saw him flinch, and then I open up the door without knocking, and I see him flinching. But only because he was allowed to, because there was nobody in the room.
In the privacy of his own home.
In his own room. Nobody there. And I'm like, what the freak? And I'm a kid, you know, and then he, you know, got mad that I came in and, you know, and straightened himself right out. And I noticed, it left an impression in my head. There's no teacher like seeing, nothing like seeing and living and witnessing. And within a millisecond, the pain was gone. And so I didn't articulate that into my brain at that moment. I didn't know how to articulate it. I didn't know how to, but it was registered. It was imprinted. And as I got older, all of that started to come to formation. That you don't have to have pain if you don't want to. You don't have to make excuses if you don't want to. You don't have to bail out of something if you don't want to. You don't have to show that you don't feel good if you don't want to. You don't have to say no if you don't want to. You don't have to say I can't if you don't want to. And I'm so it started to, all of that came to me later. But I saw it. It was like putting something in a program, and I know nothing about computers, but I know the theory of them. And it was like putting something into a program that was being stored to be
for later use.
For later. Up, what they call that?
Uploading.
Uploading. That's the word, babe. For later uploading. And I just, you know, this guy, like I said, he, you know, he was you know, he was special. And so he taught me, you know, how to be a pro without talking about it, how to be a trainer. Without teaching it, he was living it.
By his actions.
And showing it. And so I got lost. You know, I got lost. I wrote a book when I finally thought it was okay to write it, when my kids were old enough to understand it and to try to explain. I wrote the book. People said, you wrote it for this, you wrote it for that. I wrote it for myself so I could learn.
It was therapeutic?
Well, it wasn't therapeutic. I'm not going to say because...
Wait, is that Atlas, From the Streets to a Ring, A Son's Struggle to Be a Man?
Yeah. I can't say it was therapeutic. Maybe it was, but it's not like I needed a couch and a freaking guy. You know what I mean? I'm not that guy, really. I think what I did need, I needed some kind of resolution to... I guess what I needed was... I needed to explain it to myself. That makes sense?
Yeah, of course it does. You put it into words and it's real, then you can...
Yeah, I needed to explain it to myself. And that was my way of kind of figuring it out in that way for myself. And I also thought it was a way of saying it to my kids that they hadn't heard yet because they were old enough to look at it. And So, you know, so, you know, so when I wrote it, it was, again, it was, it was the right time, I guess, for me to be able to go down that road and, you know, do that kind of project. And just, again, it was about, it was also a way of kind of saying thanks to my father, like, you know, and it was, like I said earlier, he was the toughest guy with all these people that I knew that were supposed to be tough guys. He might have been the only tough guy I ever knew. I mean, like,
that's a bold statement.
I mean, when it comes down to the true
real toughness,
the true definition and the true testing, because you really don't know about people until they're tested, and really in any dimension, you really don't. You know, you could think you love this girl and you want to marry her and everything, but until there's a test, you're really not sure about that true commitment of love.
Until you first get to adversity, you don't know how to handle it.
Yeah, some kind of test. And, you know, you don't know about a fighter till they're tested. You don't know about a friend. I remember Cuss was a smart man, and he was my mentor in boxing. And I remember he told me one time when he was young that a friend of his came to him very, very upset. And Cuss said, "What are you so upset about?" And he said, I've been friends with this guy 20 years. You know, they were like, whatever. It was younger than Cuss's life. So maybe Cuss was 30. I don't know what he was at that time, 35, whatever he was trying to project in the story. And he said, so this friend of his tells him, "I'm really upset because this guy's 20 years of friendship, and I find out today he's not my friend no more." So Cuss says to him, "Well, whatever tells you that he was ever your friend?" And the guy got very insulted, very insulted, because he was upset to begin with, and Cuss is not appreciating his hurt. And he said, "Do you hear what I just said? How could you say that? He's been my friend for 20 freaking years." He said, "I'm going to say it again. How do you know he was ever your friend?" And the guy, you know, was like a little lost at understanding this. And Cuss says, "Other than having beers together, whatever you were doing, hanging out, playing ball together, playing stickball together, I get it." He said, "But how do you know beyond that he was ever your friend? Was there ever a situation," a test is what he's getting at, "but was there ever a situation that demanded of him, that asked of him to put himself in harm's way?" And he's like, "No. Was there ever a situation where it would be uncomfortable for him to be your friend? Was there ever a temptation for him not to be your friend?" And he went down this laundry list of stuff that was in Cuss's head from the way Cuss lived.
That showed friendship.
Yeah, the way Cuss, you know, lived his life and marked such things and graded, you know, gauged such things. And the guy was like speechless. And then the guy was like quiet. He was, "No." He goes, "Well, today there was."
And he wasn't a friend.
And he was never your friend.
Teddy, you promised me 6 hours. We're going to do another couple.
No, I didn't.
No. We're going to do 2 more minutes. We're going to.
I promised you 20 minutes, and you're freaking. I got to throw you out of this joint.
We're going to go quick questions, quick. All right, Ted? A few quick ones. Quick answers.
I feel bad for the people listening out there.
Why? They're going to love this, Ted.
You know why? Because I get lost sometimes. Because I start to say something, and I'll get so into, you know, the feelings of what that attached to me with. What it's attached to me with, you know, the meaning of it, that I'll lose track of where my jump off point was. And if I did, then I'm sorry.
But Teddy, if the story wasn't good, I would have cut you off. All right, we're going to go quick, Teddy. Throughout your whole career, any cool memorabilia that you kept throughout the years?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't like a memorabilia guy. Like, mm-hmm. I never thought, like, after a fight of keeping hand wraps.
Sure.
You know, and people do.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's not a good thing, because I think it is kind of cool. But I just was ignorant of it, I guess. I wasn't really. But then at some point, my kids open your eyes to a different world. And my son, when my beautiful son came along into my life, and my beautiful daughter, but my son being a son, mm-hmm. it was such an important thing to him to get autographs. It was like a big day. I would take him to all the games. I mean every game I could when I was home, and because I mm-hmm. felt guilty. I was away in training camp. I got to take him. We would stand outside looking for order. I mean, things I would never do. I would hate to do. But I would do for him because it was important to mm-hmm. him. Because he was a kid that, I'm in the sports world, so he wanted to. And I played ball with him, and he was a good ball player. And that was my way of being with him and bonding and stuff. And, I was always in a park with him when I was home. And I was always the pitcher for both teams so we could have games, and a quarterback for both teams so we could have games. And, it was a big deal for him to get autographs. Oh, Dad, can we get that guy's autograph? Dad, can we do this? Dad, can we? So he opened my eyes to something that I had no thought of. And so then I started saying, wait a minute, this stuff's important for him.
Mm-hmm.
So let me hold on to some of this stuff. So here, have it. My daughter, of course, but it was, it was because of him. So yeah, I started, there was a lot of things I would start to say for him. So downstairs in my basement, I got Michael Jordan signed stuff and Wheaties boxes. I mean, I got Shaquille O'Neal signed basketballs and posters when he was with the Orlando Magic. Because again, he opened my eyes.
That's cool.
So, I got Pernell Whitaker, Evander Holyfield signed stuff. I even got, and this one I'm as proud, maybe the proudest one, I got a Jack Johnson signed card. Yeah, Jack Johnson, because I wanted my son to have something special. The first black heavyweight champ of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was special. So I said,
that's one of the holy grails of memorabilia.
Well, I said, so let me get something like that. So I did. So I got that, I got that for him. And so,
How about this? You and I are out. Who's the coolest person in your phone, one person, Teddy, that if you texted them, they would text you right back? That would impress people.
No, I'm not getting into that because I feel like a jerk.
Well, you
like,
got to give me one cool person in your phone. I know you got cool people.
No, I mean, listen, I'm very fortunate. That
just give me a cool person.
I know, because that leaves someone else out. I'm not doing that. Because that leaves,
I know you have good people in there.
I'm lucky. I'm very, very fortunate. I'm not going out there and whatever that word is, name dropping. Is that what that's called?
I was trying
called?
To make a name
that
drop.
Name, I ain't doing that. I'm lucky enough to they're all good. Because you know why? Because I can call them.
And they'll write back to you.
And they're not because, and if I need them, I'll give you one.
Okay.
There's a million of them. That's good ones. But I was in a, I don't know, got to be 10 years already. Could even be a minute longer than that. But I was at the Kessler Institution. I don't know if you know what that is. And it's a rehab center, a very advanced one. Maybe one of the best in the country, in Jersey,
mm-hmm.
for traumatic injuries, spinal, everything. And it was a young kid from Staten Island. He doesn't live on Staten Island no more. At the time, he might have just moved to Jersey. I'm not even sure. But anyway, he was from Staten Island originally, and he was like 15 years old, and he had a traumatic injury with swimming. Won't go into the exact details of it, Foundation has been involved in quite a few of these, to be quite frank. But anyway, maybe it was more than 10 years ago, but it was, so he went from a healthy 15-year-old kid playing sports and all life in front of him to he was a quadriplegic, like in 2 seconds. Oof. You know, because he broke his spine, whatever the, and his neck, you know, and in this accident which involving with, you know, with the water. And so we get a call to the foundation that the family needs help. So one of the things we do first is we buy this machine that helps with the bone density when you get out of the rehab. But you got to get out of the rehab, you get home, because now there's a whole new journey in front of you that you got to continue with the rehab, and you got to, you know, so many things you try, even though you're pretty much, they try for the first year to get back what you can get back. But after that, it's, you know, it's gone.
It's a lost cause, maybe.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, it's gone. But, I mean, but you have these machines you need. I mean, first of all, we do this a lot. We help put in a stair lift. Sometimes you have to put in a lift that's like almost like a little mini elevator to get them up, depending on the configuration of where they live, you okay. know. Or sometimes the ramp. So we were asked to do, I think it was a bone density machine where they put you in the machine, you, and it just strengthens your bone density. You know, you still can't walk mm-hmm. or nothing, but it depends on what phase of injury you have, you know. But anyway, I'm pretty sure that was the machine. It was one of those, or it might have been the it might have been that, or the lift in the house. It might have been both. But anyway, we were asked to, and we helped. But then we got another call, which was more difficult. Because the least difficult thing is writing a check to buy a piece of machinery. You validate it, you see it's real, and you thank God that you got the money to write it. And that you have the help of good people that give you those resources, and you write it. It's not that difficult. But then you get a phone call where you come to the hospital. That gets a little bit more difficult. But you say yes. And you go to the hospital and you see this family that's been, you know, torn apart by this. And you see this young kid, you know, in a bed. And he can't move anymore. And, you know, you talk to the mother in the hallway and you get information. And part of that information is stuff that, you know, you don't really want to know, but you have to, but you wind up knowing, of course, is that, you know, the kid don't want to live no more. You know, which I think any human being out there is going to be able to understand, you uh-huh. know, that you could go through those thoughts, right? If you're in that situation. And so you start thinking, what am I going to say? I got to, what I say has to really, it's got to work. Even though you, what gives you the right to think you're going to say something? But that's how you feel. It's got to work. It's got to get through to this kid. So you're sitting there, and 1 hour becomes 2 hours, 2 hours becomes 3 hours, 3 hours becomes 4 hours. And you're talking, and and in the midst of this, you say, you're finding out things about him. And you find out that he was a hockey player. And you find out that his favorite player played for, I don't want to give too much specifics, okay. but played for one of the local teams.
Tri-state area teams.
Right, in the National Hockey League.
Okay.
And even won a Stanley Cup, okay?
Okay.
So pretty special, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you go out in the hallway and you excuse yourself and you take your flip phone. Those flip phones work.
It wasn't internationalized yet.
It was not internationalized. It could go to Yonkers. And you go in the hallway and you call one of these. See, this, I knew we could get it to the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And you call one of these names that you, however you identified it earlier, you know, kidding around and stuff. But, you know, like, important names. Yeah. No. Now it's important. No. But now it's important. And he answers the phone, and you just tell him the story, and you say, can you get over here? And he says, I'll be there in 20 minutes.
He answered the bell.
And he brings hockey sticks and signs them, and pucks and signs them. Yeah, that makes him a big shot.
Wow.
And that makes it mean something that you have those phone numbers on your phone.
Here's why you're great. Because you there's no way to even go back into boxing after that. So Teddy Atlas, and first of all, let me say this, without getting into specifics, your foundation, and this is the truth, and I'm proud to say it, literally saved my brother's life. Not even a joke, not even an exaggeration. Your foundation, when he was on rock bottom, the last possible level of life, your foundation saved his life. So I'm forever grateful to you and your foundation. So the coolest person on my phone who came through was you. And I truly mean that. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for letting me come to your house today. This is only part one. We'll do part two in 5 minutes. Now, thank you for doing the podcast. Good luck with everything.
Remember what Rocky said? Do you remember what Rocky said in the ring after the first great Rocky movie?
What?
There won't be a rematch. Don't want one.
Well, here's why I love you, because I love your honesty. Before we started the show, you're like, Mike, I really didn't want to do this, but I promised you yes, so I had to come through with it.
Listen, I'm glad I did it. You know why?
What?
Because I'm talking to a decent person.
That means a lot to me.
And the person next to you, your producer.
Simba is the greatest.
Who's a good person. So, I'm fortunate. I'm fortunate I get to spend time with two good people.
Thank you. Hey, Canelo Alvarez, who wins?
I like Alvarez, and maybe to stop him. And again, that will make a
I'm
lot
sorry,
of...
I'm sorry, I meant Alvarez.
Yeah, that might not make a lot of, you know, our local people here. Because, listen, I'll be cheering for Danny. I'm not afraid to say it. I'll be cheering for Danny. Great story, great person, great human being, terrific fighter. It's about time I say this, if I'm going to answer that question. I'm going to qualify it by saying it's about time Canelo's earning his money, right?
At
least earn some of that $350 million, right? So in that way, I'm going to say now he'll be earning his money fighting a full-fledged good middleweight who can counterpunch, can use his legs, who's got quick hands, who knows how to fight, who's got plenty of heart. But I'm not saying he's got a bad chin, Danny don't. Mm-hmm. But it's not granite. There's not a million guys out there with granite chins. Mm-hmm. But I will say that I think that Canelo Alvarez will go to the body. He showed a great ability to go to the body in the Golovkin fight. And his last fight, too, was a layup, let's be honest. But he showed great ability to go to, with a really good fighter, to go to the body. I think when you go to the body with a guy who's a good boxer, he can suddenly become less of a good boxer quickly. And I think that will be part of the strategy, part of what will take place. And I think somewhere along the line, his physical strength, his being Canelo's, will get a chance to kind of show itself, to impose itself, if you will, on Danny. And at that point, later in the fight, he'll be able to take over.
Teddy, thank you so much, man. Hey, why don't I have a Volzik shirt? Why don't I have one? How was I not supplied with a shirt?
Let me see upstairs if I got an extra one. if I do, I give it to you, but I don't know if I do. I might go with the excuse that it's in the laundry.
Teddy Ellis, thank you so much, my friend.
You're welcome.